Blog Talk Radio.
Want to pick his brain because, I mean, you know, he gets to hang around with Motown legends all day, so I need to know. But anyway, he'll be on at the 10:30 mark, and until then, we're just going to get into some good music. I am going to pull some things out of the vault, starting with
Hey, baby, I'm sorry. I never meant to hurt you.
My name.
Man, who, but when I get caught up, man, who, but when I get caught up, ooh, I let go. Thinking about you each day, I feel.
Never mistake, as may the man you see in me.
Love,
take my hand, take my heart, take my soul, and keep complete control. If that's the key to being happy, see, there's nothing I'd rather to know than be.
That would describe why I see. Oh, Your love feels set the wheels of love in motion.
Get ready for couples, ready for the ride of my life. Oh,
what I got in mind, baby, you won't be needing no Viagra or love potion.
Got plenty of my mama gave me, make you need your ride.
So baby, let nature take its course, go with flow, wherever the wind blows, take it nice and slow.
Baby, you need a girl like me. leave a girl like you, he must be
good featuring my homegirl Kaya Simone. I play a lot of Kaya Simone on my show because I want you guys to get familiar. I mean, like, I'm doing my best to get her over here, you know, get her popular, at least get her, you know, able to be able to perform at venues here in the United States because she's really, really talented. And she needs a chance to be heard over here. So, you know, I work really hard to help her. Either way, before that we had Carl Thomas with My Valentine, Brad Marquis with All of Me, and we let them set off with Something Out of the Vault, my favorite Boys II Men song of all time, CFO, off their very first CD. And as I stated before, I got a guest for you tonight, and he was sitting in the queue, but I guess he got disconnected. Let me give him a chance to call back in, but while let me tell you a little bit about him. He is the drummer for the Four Tops. Yeah. That in itself is worthy of a whole interview because I got so many questions about him. But he's here to promote his new song that he just released, his new single. It's called he's back in the queue now, so let me just go ahead and bring him in. Please help me welcome to the Soul Sessions Radio Show, Mr. Drew Schultz.
There, brother.
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me? Check, check.
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Hear me? Check, check.
Okay. Hello?
Hey, there we go.
Yeah, that's the second time I've done that, too. I forgot to turn my mic up. See, what happens is whenever I use an external mic, and whenever I disconnect it and reconnect it, I got to go back into the settings and turn the volume up. And I keep forgetting to do that, which means everything that I've said tonight so far has not been heard.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and that's 2 weeks in a row that I've done that, too. But anyway, they can hear me now. So let me go ahead and formally reintroduce you, because I was sitting there running my mouth, too. Folks out there, I do realize that you could not hear me before, and I do apologize. But allow me to introduce to you Mr. Drew Schultz. Mr. Drew Schultz is the drummer for the Four Tops. And, yeah, Drew, I got a lot to talk about with that alone, but I know that's not all of why you're here, so I want to make sure that we get to talk about everything that we need to talk about.
Oh, go ahead then, please.
I mean, but you know, I could take all night with that alone, so I want to get I want to get the important stuff out of the way. Now you do have yeah, true. You do
or
have
or
a
none
new
of it
single,
is, depending on how you look at it.
Well, it's important to me. I'll say that much. It's important to me. But yeah, you have a new single that you just released. It's I didn't really get a chance to listen. I kind of skimmed through it as I was, you know, preparing for the show. But I wanted to make sure that, you know, I got a good listen to it on the show. You know, I wanted to make sure that I had that experience. So that's why I really didn't fully listen to it the first time around. But it's called Crying in a Whisper, and I believe it is actually featuring the Four Tops.
Yes, sir, and James Jamerson Jr. as well.
And James Jamerson Jr. Yeah, first, who is that? Because that's the one that I've never heard of.
Ah, well, James Jamerson Sr., his father, was the bass player for the Funk Brothers. And the Funk Brothers were the backing band for Motown. They were their in-house session band. So James Jamerson Sr. is the bass player on nearly every single hit that Motown had between 1959 and 1972, and in fact, he's the bass player on nearly every song they recorded in those studios, whether or not it was a hit. And his son, James Jamerson Jr., is no slouch either. He's a fantastic bass player, and when he wants to, he can play like his dad, and when he wants to, he can get down to the flapping and popping and everything else, and he's toured with Smokey Robinson and the Temptations and Chaka Khan. He's recorded his own hit record with the group. It was called Chanson. Not Chanson in the 70s, and he's no joke. But his dad was the bass player on all those Four Tops hits.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yep, so when you hear the single, you hear that bass really pumping. And that's J-Mo. Everybody calls him J-Mo in Detroit. That's him.
That's what's up. Now, I am going to play that a little later, but I want to, I got to ask, you know, I got a lot of questions. One, how did you find your way to being the drummer for the Four Tops?
Well, I mean, it was a long story, a lot of different players involved with that, but I've always been a big, big fan of Motown music. It's really been what I listened to. It's been what I wanted to play and write and perform and everything, and the Four Tops specifically were kind of like my favorite band growing up as a kid. Like kids do when when they latch onto a TV show or to anything else, comic books or whatever, for me it was music. And so I went and I would find every Motown record I could find, especially the Four Tops. And so I just knew that music. I knew it like the back of my hand, and I knew how they did it in specific years. I knew how the horns played and everything. And so their drummer, the guy before me, his name was Benjamin Corbett. Everybody called him Butch. And Butch was like one of my favorite drummers because I had been listening to all his Four Tops stuff for so long. And while I was studying jazz in New York at college, they came to New York. And I approached Butch asking if I could study with him. And that's how that all started. It was because of Benjamin Corbett. And Butch really kind of took me into the picture, as well as George Rountree, who was their conductor and musical director. So it was really Butch and George Rountree. And sorry to be drawn out about it, but, you know, they got to know me a little bit and knew that I knew the music, and they started calling me to play hand percussions whenever they came to the New York area. So I would sit in and play congas and tambourine and wind chimes and bongos and all the little extra percussive stuff. And, you know, unfortunately, when the time came that Butch could not do it anymore, both him and George Roundtree really pushed to have me play drums. That's how it happened.
And how long have you been with them?
I started playing hand percussion with them in 2008 and became their full-time drummer in August of 2009, I guess. So I've been traveling with them for 3 years now.
Wow, that's nice.
Yeah, yeah, it's been a fantastic trip.
Now, growing up listening to them, I mean, would you have ever imagined that you would actually be playing with them?
No. I never really thought I'd be in the same room with them beyond being in the audience. No, it was very much a dream come true, you know?
Right. I can imagine. Yeah, so let's get back into this single. I wish I had more music that I could play, you know, but I have this one, and I'm trying to draw it out because I don't want to play it just yet, but I do want to play it. So let's talk about how you came to actually produce this song. I mean, I remember you saying when we first, you know, talked that, you know, this was proceeds from this song were going to a particular charity.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about that, and as I was saying before, I want to talk about how it is that you came to, you know, produce this particular song.
Man, I hate to be long-winded again, but
Take your time.
My writing kind of started with Uriel Jones, and Uriel was the drummer for the Funk Brothers. Just like Jameson Sr., Uriel was on tons and tons of those Motown tracks. He was the drummer for that band for years. And I got to know him, just again kind of seeking him out, especially to study with him. And I never took a formal lesson, but I would call him and keep in touch all the time and just shoot the breeze about drums over the phone. And he told me that one of the things he regretted the most was not writing music. He had really only been a performer and a session guy his entire life. He never really got into the writing side of things.
Right.
And I kind of took that to heart because he was one of my favorite performers ever telling me to write. So I started writing things here and there and was never really happy with something until this song, Cry and Whisper. This was one of the first full songs I ever wrote. And I make it sound like it was so long ago. This was only a couple years ago. But I had a demo for it, and I was on the road with the Cops. And I was in the airport, actually. We were on our way to some gig. And Duke Fakir, who's one of the original members of the Cops, he's the original member left performing, Duke was like, "Oh, hey, man, what are you listening to?" Just talking, passing the time. I told him, I said, "This is this demo of a song that I just finished writing." And he asked to hear it. And he said, "Oh, man, this kind of sounds like a Four Tops song." And I thought he was just being nice. But that stuck in the back of my mind. And so as I wrote more songs and as this record came together, the idea came to pass, I really had these songs in mind for the Four Tops. And so he was very receptive when I came to him and said, "Hey, I want to do it for a charity project for the schools, and I'd love for you guys to be involved."
That's what's up. Yeah, so let's talk about the charity aspect of it. Now, I want to know more about that. What exactly is the name of the charity? I mean, and what about them that
well,
draws you to want to support them?
It's not really a specific charity. It's the portion of the proceeds are going to the music programs of the Detroit Public School System.
Oh, okay. Got you.
So the state, now I might be incorrect in some of this information. I'm going to say how I think it's gone down, but the state of Michigan has created this foundation separate from the school itself that deals with donations and deals with financial aspects of the school. And so the money is going to the Detroit Public Schools Foundation and specifically to the music programs. And, you know, for no reason other than the fact that I was lucky enough to go to a really amazing public school with a fantastic music program. And, you know, I'd like to help foster that if I can.
So you're from Detroit?
No, I'm actually from a city right outside of Cleveland called Shaker Heights, and Cleveland, Ohio. And Shaker Heights, just, you know, I was fortunate enough to grow up there, and their public school program is just amazing. The, you know, the marching band is like 300-something people, and they have four different bands and three jazz ensembles and two choirs and a gospel choir and, you know, a full theater program and everything. They just have such an arts program. And I didn't realize how important that was until I left and I started meeting people who would talk about, oh, well, you know, our school only had 10 people in the marching band, or our jazz band didn't have a bass player because nobody was interested in doing it, or they didn't have the equipment or the money or the, you know, it was just, I kind of realized what I had and after I was gone.
Right. I can imagine. I can imagine. Yeah, my the high school that I went to, well, I mean, you know, we had a band, and I think our choir was probably the more prominent thing. You know, they were the renowned factor musically.
Mm-hmm.
And I can imagine a lot of resources went into them. But, you know, our band was okay. I mean, at that time, I guess I never really saw them, you know, past just them being on the football field. Like, to me, you know, I just looked at them as halftime entertainment for the football games. I never really thought, you know, about the band more than that. But
right.
The choir,
mm-hmm.
The choir, you know, because they just always sounded so good. I mean, and, you know, there was a lot of turnover. And so, you know, it wasn't that many people that stayed the whole 4 years in it. And I remember my the keyboard teacher that I had, she was the choir director. Well, she still is. And I remember at one point, you know, she was trying to get me to join the choir because
mm-hmm.
kept saying she needed more baritones. And
yeah.
I would have done it until she said the words that I just did not want to hear. Everyone has to do a solo. And I was like, I'm not doing it because, I, you know, I can't. You know, I don't like being in front of the crowd like that. You know, so I could have never, you know, I don't think I could have ever gotten through it. But I wish I would have joined the choir, you know, in hindsight, because just to have that experience. But either way. But, yeah. Oh, good. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to kind of play off that. You know, I always thought that part of what you're talking about, especially just having to step out on stage and being kind of forced to do that, I thought that's one of the best things about school music programs. It offers everyone at least the opportunity to become comfortable in their own skin in front of people. You know, that's such a big thing. And I know that a lot of people would say that arts programs are not the most essential part of an education, especially at a time when the economy is tough, that the more important parts are reading and math and science and social studies, and that's true. That's, you know, those are the basic skills, but the arts programs, I think, offer a way for kids to get to know themselves that a lot of academics don't.
Right, right, exactly. I was just going to say that. Personally, I do understand the need for, you know, math and all that stuff, but I think arts are just as important because it helps shape, like you were saying, it helps shape a well-rounded student.
Yeah.
I mean, math and stuff, yes, it's important, you know, it's important for one aspect of life, which is, you know, you want to be able to, you know, count money, and, you know, you want to be able to read, and I, you know, and that is important, but at the same time, like you said, you want to be able to be in touch with yourself. You want to be able to, you know what it is that you know, like, inspires you in the world. And I don't think any type of math can do that unless you're just, you know, you're just a supremely analytical type individual. And
right.
math is that kind of thing for you. Because I guess me, because I'm kind of both-brained in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I understand math on a theoretical level, and that's where I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, I love music. And
right.
I love art, and I love all that stuff. And to me, it holds equal importance. And
right.
so, I was just going to say that, you know, I would never want to be in a position to have to sacrifice one for the other, because I don't think I could do it.
Yeah, I agree completely. But I think that's the position that a lot of school districts are finding themselves in, and not
right.
just Detroit. I mean, all across the country.
Right.
You know, and I hate to get political. I don't like to shove views down anybody's throat, but this whole thing about vilifying teachers, saying that teachers having pensions and teachers are one of the most important things for any country to develop, because you have to have educated young people coming up to keep running the country and to keep making things happen, whether it's scientific discovery or artistic development or just straight politics. It's important to be educated, and arts is a part of that. You're absolutely right. It is a part of that.
I have a view, or at least not a view. I have an opinion as to why teachers have been vilified like that. That's something. I'll have that conversation with you off the air, because, yeah, it's a little deep. But I have a question for you. Something for the Soul, who is hanging out with me in the chat room, wants to know, what other instruments do you play?
Oh, but tell them I say hi. I'm primarily a drummer. I play a lot of hand percussion as well, like I was saying. And I fiddle around on piano. That's actually, I first started on piano. My mom taught me. And then I also took, you know, basic keyboard theory while I was in college. And a lot of the writing that I do is on piano. Almost all of it is. And I am not a singer by any means, but I can get a melody out. So a lot of the times when I write, I'll sequence all of my own parts with a electric keyboard, sing all my own really, really terrible leads and harmonies just to get the idea on tape, and then play drums and percussion. So, but I would never charge someone for my services as a keyboard player or a singer, either in a studio or live. But as far as the writing, you know, and my process, keys and voice to a tiny extent.
Right. I can understand that. Well, let's get into the song. I have a lot more questions, but I want to get into the song before I completely forget. And next thing you know, we're done and I haven't played it. So I definitely want to get into this. Now, if you could set this up for me a little bit. You know, just talk a little bit about what the song itself is about, and then we'll go ahead and get into it.
Cool. Well, I mean, the song is, I don't know, it's one of those happy-sounding sad songs, if that makes sense. And it's a typical love song. You know, it's a typical unrequited love song. Of a guy standing there saying, look, I need to know what's going on with this relationship before I decide to move on. And, you know, the chorus is talking about how he's been torturing himself over not knowing whether or not this was something that was for real, if it was something that he was just imagining because he was so into this girl, or however you want to look at it as a listener, but that's how I wrote it.
Oh, I know all about that feeling.
I think we all do. Which is one of the beautiful things about a love song, you know. It's one of the most unifying things you can have, I would say.
Right. Understandable. All right, folks. Well, here we go. This is Crying in a Whisper. And enjoy.
Try since day one. Well, I mean, I want to know in general.
he wants to know for Pat.
In general, I mean, I started playing drums in third grade, taking lessons and whatnot. And it wasn't too long after that that I was just performing at little school functions and stuff like that. And I want to say the first time I ever performed was was as like a snare drummer for a musical that we did in fourth grade. And I can still, I'm trying to remember the name of it, but the one thing I can remember is there was a scene in a baseball diamond where the kid was supposed to hit a home run, so I was supposed to crack the snare to act like the bat hitting the ball. And I can just remember that part vividly. I can't remember anything else about it. But that was probably the first time I performed, period. And performed for pay. There was a group, a trio that I was in, that we called the Vanguard Trio, and it was me and two guys from the Cleveland Heights High School, Jacob Bergson and Nathan Davis, who are still both playing. Jacob's a keyboard player in New York, and I actually recently reconnected with him back in Brooklyn, and Nathan is a saxophone player, and they're both just killer musicians today. But back then, we were all not as good as we thought we were. And so I can remember the first time I ever played for pay was at a club in Tremont, right outside of Cleveland, with Nathan and Jacob, and it had to be in, like, middle school, so probably 7th or 8th grade.
Really?
And, and it was like a little, like, restaurant bar that had live jazz once a week. And, you know, they paid us, like, $25 or something, or $50. It wasn't a ton, but hey, it was a show. It was experience.
Right. Oh, that's what's up, though. I mean, just the fact that you got, you know, to get paid at such a young age. I remember when I was in middle school, I wasn't even close to thinking about doing anything to get paid. No, that's not true. I was selling candy.
Candy. There you go. Hey, I don't know if I should have been thinking about playing drums for money. I still have a couple recordings of us playing down in in our basement, and pretty embarrassing. But it's fun to go back and listen to, you know.
Have you ever thought of redoing any of those songs from back then?
Oh no, I think we were just playing like Charlie Parker tunes and jazz standards at that point.
Oh, that's right, because you did say you didn't start writing until recently.
Right. Actually, when I first went to college, it was the first time I started my own band that I was spearheading this project. And at that point, I was trying to be Earth, Wind, and Fire. So we had two guitars and two saxophones, two trumpets, four singers, drums, bass.
Wow.
It was totally unsustainable, but it was a lot of fun. And we did record one song that we wrote as a group that just had these terribly cheesy lyrics, but we all got really into writing all these kind of fun puns and wordplay, and I do have that and would love to perform that with those guys again sometime.
That's what's up. That is what's up. I was saying you brought back some memories when I was in college. Few friends of mine, like, I guess, you know, we thought we would be the next Boyz II Men. And so, you know, we got our little four-part group together, and we would go over our friend's house and practice and stuff. And
at least you could sing. You're a,
but you know what? I can't really say that. I was okay. I don't think I would have ever really tried to, you know, really get paid to do it. But I was okay. Like, I could carry a tune, and I wasn't the worst sounding guy in the world. But
I think you're probably being hard on yourself, man. Probably.
Maybe I am, but I don't know. You know, if I bust out into song right now, I think you would understand.
Go for it, man. Go for it. I think you should.
No. I reserve that strictly for the shower now. For as long as music is actually playing, because I think, like, for me, it's easy to sing along than to actually sing something by myself.
Yeah.
That's how I am.
I mean, I'm the same way. Like I said, I should not be singing for anybody, but just in order to efficiently and quickly get demos out, you got to do what you got to do, you know?
Urban Trigger. Now, I want to ask you, because what I am trying to do is to get into songwriting. I write poetry, and I've heard that, you know, it's real easy to make the transition, but I find it hard, you know, and I ask everyone that I interview this because I try to get as much advice as possible. But, you know, I mean, I guess if you have any advice that you could impart upon me, you know, in terms of being able to write a successful song, I'm all ears because I try and I try. But for me, because I don't play an instrument, like I don't have anything to create a melody. And so, like, I just kind of go off this scant sound that I hear in my head.
Mm-hmm.
But it's never really the same. So when I'm writing, it all ends up just coming out like poetry, no matter how I do it. And so I'm just trying to figure out, like, how do you, you know, write a structured song without being able to play any instruments? Like, I don't know what to do.
Well, I would suggest investing in some kind of program that allows you to lay audio.
And say that again?
Any kind of computer program that allows you to layer audio. And that could be a program like GarageBand or even something free like Audacity. Audacity is a free program where you can layer audio.
Yeah, I have something now, AVS. Audio suite.
Perfect. That's more than good enough. So take that program, and as a vocalist, you can probably hum a bass line and record that as one track, and then you can hum a little melody line and record that as one track, and scat a little, you know, beatbox a little drum thing, and right there, you have enough to give to somebody and say, hey, here's an idea, here's a melodic idea, here's some scratch chord progressions. And, you know, it might sound like Bobby McFerrin for a second, but it's there. The idea is there, you know?
Right.
And then you can go ahead and start working on essentially applying the poetry to music. And I think that one of the most important things in poetry is rhythm. I'm sure couplets and iambic pentameter and different syllable emphases, all that kind of stuff. You know, pick a repetitive rhythmic syllable structure and try and stick to it for a verse and change it up for the chorus. Go back to it for the verse, you know, chorus, change it up again for the bridge, and you have a full song. And if you're a poet, then you have the part that most musicians have problems with down, and that's lyric writing.
Right, because I can write lyrics. I will say that because even in my poetry, you know, because I have a hip hop influence, so it's real easy to be lyrical. It's just, you know, as long as I think of it as a poem, then I can write it, and it's no problem because I have this, and I use that like that bass rhythmic pattern. Like I use that for my poetry.
It's
easy to do, but it just seems so hard when people are like, well, you can make this into a song, and, you know, and I've tried. I go back and I look at stuff that I've already written, and I try. But like I said, you know, without any type of instrumentation, it just seems like, I don't know. I don't know what it seems like, but.
Well, I'll tell you something that Uriel Jones told me when he was talking about writing. Even if you don't think it's good enough, just do it. Just finish it. Get an idea on tape. Get it down. And then move on to the next thing. Because until you give it out, it's just going to be sitting there for you to hear and for you to become comfortable with it. And you can go back to it later, whether that's later that day, the next week, the next month, the next year. You can always go back to it. But the hardest thing to do is to write a song and then put it down and say, okay, I'm done with that for now. I'm going to move on to the next thing. It's so hard to just be done with writing a song. And you never have to be done. You can always go back and change things, but you know, I'm just saying it's worth a shot to just get it down on tape and then move on, and you can always go back to it later.
Right. I can dig it. So what kind of inspirations do you draw from? I mean, just in general, like, I would imagine that you draw from a lot of your experiences, you know, being with these great Motown artists. But I mean, just as a songwriter in itself, like, you know, do you have any other influences in your music? I hear a lot of people talk about, you know, drawing from life experience or being able to draw from someone else's experience, you know, things like that. I mean, that applies to you as well?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, the sad truth is that no fan of music ever wants to hear that a song did not come from a real place. But, you know, a lot of songs I've written come from very real emotions that I'm feeling and things I'm personally going through. And then every once in a while, you know, no joke, I'll be watching a TV show and there will be some situation or some or somebody will say a phrase and I'll say, man, that would be great for a song. And you just kind of roll with it and let it develop from that. Sometimes it's as simple as that. So it's from all sorts of different things. Whenever that thing strikes, I hope I have something to write with. That's all.
Yeah, that's why I keep my phone handy. Mm-hmm. If I don't have a pen or anything to write down, I try to have something that I could jot. At least, because to me, it sometimes it might come in stretches, but usually it's just like little segments.
Yeah.
But I want to make sure that I get it down, and then maybe I could go back later and figure out what to do with it.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah, I mean, it's tough, but you just gotta, like I said, you just gotta write something and have the ability to not only see it through to some form of completion, even if it might not be perfect in your eyes, just to be able to say, this is a complete idea from start to finish. Even if it's not perfect, it's complete. It has an ending and a beginning and a middle. And then step back and let that sit with you for a little while.
I understand completely. I'm actually looking through what you just sent me.
Mm-hmm.
I want to load up another track that I could play. Just trying to go through and figure out which one. So you tell me, like, which song should I play for these folks?
Well, the second single on the record is called So Many Fish in the Sea, and it's track 14, and it does feature Ken Knox of Chairman of the Board, as well as Richard Figueroa and Thomas Hunter. And they're just fantastic. Ken Knox is not only singing a lot of the lead on this track, but playing saxophone as well. That saxophone solo was him. He's just inhuman. So that would probably be the go-to one right there.
All right, so just give me a chance to load this up, and we can go ahead and play it for him.
Cool.
So in the meantime, while I'm doing this, I mean, do you have any performances lined up in the future? Anything that you want to put out there?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm actually, I don't mean to sound absent-minded, but I'm actually in the process of packing for Billings, Montana. We're playing with the Four Tops tomorrow. And then Sunday night, I'll be in Detroit playing at a tribute to Bob Babbitt. And Bob was the bass player also with the Funk Brothers. And unfortunately, he passed away a couple months ago. They're having a great big event for him in Detroit. So I'll be playing at that Sunday. And then September 7th in Brooklyn, I'll be playing like a welcome back show with my own group, The Funk Machine, who are actually the backing musicians on this entire record. So you're about to hear a little bit of them on this track, So Many Fish in the Sea.
You said that's your group, The Funk Machine?
Mm-hmm. The Funk Machine,
okay,
yes.
Yeah, let's talk about them. Let's talk about them. Like, I mean, how'd you? I mean, you know, with all that you do, you know, with the Four Tops, how'd you find time to form a group one and, you know, to be able to? Because I can imagine, you know, you guys got to practice and all that stuff. Like, how do you find the time to do all that?
Well, I know I mentioned that that group I formed when I first got to school that was really huge. The Funk Machine is actually the boiled down rhythm section from that enormous group. So I've been playing with these guys for 6 years now. And, you know, we just got extraordinarily tight as a group and as a rhythm section playing throughout our college years, that when I went with the Tops, I would come back into town and we would book a show here and there at a club in New York, mostly at this great restaurant called Jules. And sometimes we wouldn't even have to rehearse because we had such a huge catalog of songs that we all knew from playing together for so long. So we just get together and play. And when I did the record, I had to have these guys on the record because we have such chemistry and I know them so well. They're some of my best friends in the world. And so they flew out to Detroit from New York for a week and we recorded the entire record in a week. Well, all the rhythm tracks at least.
Right.
And for those people curious, the group is myself and Gent LaPalme on bass, Emilio Tostado on guitar, Chris Ames on vocals, who's featured on a couple of songs on the record as well. And then Daniel Sealing on guitar, and now we're playing with Dave Melton on keys, too.
Man, it really sounds like music is your life. Like, I'm not an envious person, but if I would be, that would be why. Because, like, I mean, I wish I would be able, you know, I could be able to have stories like this to tell. Because, I mean, that's the kind of thing, like, you could tell that to your kids. Like, yeah, I played with the Four Tops. Like, you guys don't get it, but you can ask anybody from my generation, and they'll get it. You know, like, it's the Four Tops. And then you could ask people from your parents' generation, and they'll probably flip their wig. Like, you know, I still haven't told my parents yet about this because, you know, I don't want to give them a heart attack, like, especially my mother. Like, I know so much about the Four Tops because literally between them and the Temptations, that's all I heard. No, that's not true. Also heard a lot of Smokey Robinson and the Miracles.
Yeah, yep.
A lot of Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. But, yeah, it was between those three. As a matter of fact, I have a story. My mother had this, it was a live album that the Temptations performed at the Apollo. I don't remember exactly what year, 1960-something, I'm not sure. But I sat on it and broke it one day.
Oh, no.
I didn't mean to. I didn't mean to. Like, it was sitting, it was in the chair, and I didn't realize it was sitting in the chair, and I sat down on it and broke it. Oh, man. I think, like, if she could have killed me, she would have. If she could have killed me and gotten away with it, she would have. Like, the look on her face was like, you know, I suggest you leave my sight right now. Die. And I just left, like, I'm sorry, didn't know, but I just,
yeah.
Remember, like, you know, and we still have, well, I still have them, like, all of her old vinyl. And, you know, I'm looking for an opportunity to transfer them to CD.
Yeah.
I haven't touched them because I don't want to touch those. Like,
yeah.
I figure after I do transfer them, then I'll give those, you know, I'll donate those to some type of museum or something. Or, you know, or just somewhere where somebody could do something with that. Because, you know, to me, they'll just sit there. Like, but I want the music to be heard. But I don't want to play those records because, I mean, they're just like, they're like classic. I don't know, it's like, I can't imagine, but it's like, I just don't want to touch them. Like, I just want to let them be. Maybe if I
could
plastic or something and just let them exist without anybody bothering them. But at the same time, I do want to hear the music.
And I'll tell you what, for me, there is nothing better than putting on a record or even a CD and being able to sit there and hold the case and read the liner notes and look at the artwork and see who's playing which instrument on which song and who wrote what. I miss that in the digital format. I don't mind MP3s, and I think that it's fantastic because it gets immediate access to everybody's music. You can just go on iTunes and find almost anybody, almost anyone, and that's a beautiful thing. But I love a physical package with that information and aesthetic.
Right. I understand what you mean. Now, I guess for me, because, you know, I practically grew up in the digital age, I have an affinity for both. Just the tech side of me, you know, appreciates, you know, where technology has taken the industry. But
mm-hmm.
like you said, I mean, there's nothing like being able to hold that in your hand and just look through it and see. And it's funny, like when I actually listen to the music, I won't do it while I'm listening to the music. I'll do it later, like because I just tend to focus on the music. And so, you know, I won't sit there and I won't read stuff while I'm listening to the music. But later I can go through and I'll read and be like, oh, okay, yeah, that's what that was. That's who that was. Or it's always nice to find that out, especially like if it's somebody you know and you realize that they're on this album. It's like, oh, I didn't know that. You know, that kind of thing.
Right, for sure. Sure. But I don't know. I guess I'm old-fashioned that way. I love having the tactile experience just as much as the audio.
Right. Exactly. Well, I have the song loaded up, and we're going to go ahead and play that. So if you don't mind, you know, just give the audience a little background about this song, and we'll get right into it.
Cool. Well, this one is one of those ones that definitely came from a very real place. I have felt this way many, many a time, and it's kind of a fair all tell all song in a lot of ways, and I love it. It's, you know, it's about that old saying that everybody says, oh, there's so many fish in the sea, but that's what everybody keeps telling me. But it's like, man, you know, I'm getting tired of hearing it. So it's sung by Ken Knox, of Chairman of the Board, along with Richard Figueroa and Thomas Hunter, and it's kind of a very throwback Motown-y kind of tune.
All right, now you have to explain, because I'm pretty sure a lot of my listeners have no idea who Chairman of the Board is. I do, mm-hmm. So you don't have to explain it to me. But if you could explain it to them.
Yeah. Well, my music geek is going to come out here, but Chairman of the Board was a group that was fabricated, essentially, by Holland Dozier and Holland, which were the producers, huge, heavy-hitting producers at Motown. They were responsible for tons of the hits for the Supremes and for the Four Tops, some of the stuff even for Temptations, I think. I might be wrong on that. But Holland Dozier and Holland were just flagship producers at Motown. And they left. They left the label and started their own label called Invictus and another one called Hot Wax. And they put together the group Chairman of the Board out of four singers from around town that they met and wrote songs for them. And the song that everybody really knows is, you know, Give Me Just a Little More Time. That's Chairman of the Board.
Right.
But they went on to have tons of hits. I mean, Finders Keepers, Everything's Tuesday, Let Me Down Easy. And then they went down to the Carolinas after they left Holland Ocean Holland's label. And they got huge in the beach music scene down in the Carolinas. All up and down the southeastern seaboard there, they are still huge today in that scene. So they're just still rolling, and they're keeping it together. And Ken Knox is, you know, the original member. So it's kind of an honor to have him on there. And the other two guys are phenomenal as well. No joke.
Wow, actually, you taught me something. I didn't know about the history. I just know who they are, you know, because of, like you said, the one song that is very popular.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that about them at all, so thank you.
Oh, no, thank you. Shoot, I'm glad to tell.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get into it. All right, folks, this is So Many Fish in the Sea, and yeah, let's go ahead and check this out.
My mind can move an inch, hers can run a mile. No matter how long I followed, she left me behind. I was the last thing on her mind, so I had to let her go. Oh, had to let her go, let her go, let her go.
But there's so many fish in the sea.
At least that's what all my friends keep telling me. I'm so tired of casting this, it seems everlasting, to find the right one for me, yeah. After a little time went by, I managed to catch another girl's eye. She's so smart and showing up fine. She seems so happy just to be mine. But another girl was my only desire. I neglected to fan the fire, so I had to let her go.
Heard this. You've seen that movie The Wonders?
You know, I have not, no.
Really? Oh, you got to see that movie. The drummer for the Wonders, like, he reminds me of you. And I say that because he was, I mean, like you, like, are really into Motown. He was really into jazz. And so, you know, the Wonders were this group that, you know, they had a hit song. And, you know, they became famous off the hit song. And so eventually they got to Hollywood. And when they got to Hollywood, you know, the drummer, his name, I can't remember his character's name, but, you know, they just kind of called him Shades because he wore shades all the time. And so, you know, like the first time he went out, when he went to Hollywood, you know, he saw his idol, which was a jazz musician named Del Paxton. And, like, you know, he saw him and he was just like, oh, you know, great. And he knew everything about Del Paxton. He knew everything about jazz music and the way that you can, you know, spit out the history like that. He was able to do the same thing. And I was just thinking about that, like, yeah, that's you. That's you. You are like the real life Shades. Like, you should just wear shades while you're on the stage.
I can't pull them off. No, man, I appreciate that. Like I said, I've just been a real fan of this music and the people who make it. I mean, they're I don't know.
I will say this though. You know, and this is from the bottom of my heart. I, you know, as a, you know, a guy, you know, a younger guy that did not come up in that, but has an appreciation for Motown era music. It's refreshing to, you know, see someone that has so much knowledge about it and is so passionate about it that, I mean, it's folks like you that are going to keep it alive, you know, in about another 20, 30 years when these people that actually are alive now, you know, more than likely they won't be. And so we're going to need folks like you to carry the mantra, so to speak, or carry the torch. And, you know, I personally really appreciate that, you know, you have the passion enough to be able to do that.
Well, thank you. I mean, I am in no rush at all for that time to come. I want to be I want to be a student of all these musicians for as long as I can. You know, that's the truth. You know, Butch and Tree and Uriel and Duke and everybody.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I really do. But, yeah, man, I won't hold you up. I know you got, you know, things to do.
Yeah, sorry. I got a cab coming here at 4 in the morning tomorrow to take me out and hitting the road tomorrow. But I'd be glad to come on another time. I appreciate it. I love the show. Love the music, man.
Oh, for sure, for sure. I'll be definitely glad to have you. And I'll definitely hit you up sometime next week because I do, like I said, I really want to have that conversation about the teachers because, you know, I need to tell you how I feel about that. I don't want you to think I was just saying that just for interview fodder. Like, I really want you to know how I feel about that.
No, it's a weird situation. It's a very touchy thing.
Right, for sure. Well, yeah, man, go ahead, you know, get your power rest, your power nap. I know it won't be much sleep, but go ahead and do that, and we'll talk again.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, Dwayne, and I'll talk to you soon.
For sure.
All right, take care, man. Thanks. Have a nice night.
You too. All right, folks, there you have it. That was Drew Schultz, drummer for the Four Tops. The title of his CD, which will be out soon, as he said, is Back to Class. And if you happen to be a fan of Motown, you would definitely like this. He just sent me the whole thing. At first, I just had the one single, but he sent me the whole thing. And so I'm going to get a chance to really go through and listen to it. And I'll definitely be blogging about it. So check my blog out. At some point this week, I'll have something up there about it. If you don't know about my blog, it's musicallyspeaking.tumblr.com. That's musicallyspeaking.tumblr.com. And Before I get back into this music and ride this thing out, I just want to thank you again for hanging out with me. I want to thank Something for the Soul for hanging out with me in the chat room. He's gone now, but he did come through for a while. And we have a couple of anonymous guests that are hanging out. Thank you as well. And I want to thank, I'll just call her Queen. Let me go back. Oh, yeah. One and only Headlock Queen, that's her Blog Talk name. Thank you for coming through. And if you are listening via the archives, I thank you as well. And as always, I invite you to tune in every Friday to check us out live each and every Friday, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, right here on the Flavor News Radio Network. And that being said, we're going to go ahead and get back into some music. I don't know I don't know. I wish I had somebody that can give me something, a suggestion, but I don't. And so I'm just going to scroll through this for a little bit and just kind of see what happens. And now, yep, we'll start right here. All right, folks, well, again, thank you for listening, and make sure you tune in next week, and we will do this all over again. Peace. And I'll make sure I get my microphone situated right, too, because I know you guys didn't hear me for the first part of that show, and I'm sorry.
I just want to feel all right. She was looking for a friend. Ooh. Help with the life filled with so much rain. I can hear her say as the needle hit her vein, I just want to feel alright. As the memories haunt his sleep, he prays the Lord his soul to keep. But hopes to die before he wakes. Lord, hear him cry as he drinks the pain away. I just want to feel alright.
Have I come to My love of Anyone who had a heart would surely thank me. Anyone worth woo-hoo.